Council.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined for a fascinating segment of Secure Freedom Radio by an old friend and colleague, Douglas Feith, formerly the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, currently a senior fellow and director of the Center for National Security Strategies at the Hudson Institute. Doug is also the author of a best-selling book entitled War and Decision, Inside the Pentagon at the Dawn of the War on Terror. It is, by my lights, the single best and probably the single most authoritative rendering of the immediate aftermath of 9/11 and the decisions, the momentous decisions in which Doug was intimately involved that we've come to know as the early stages and important moments of the so-called war on terror. So, Doug Feith, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us.
Great to be with you.
Let's start. I know you've just completed a piece for National Review Online on the president's speech. Give us a sense of what you think he's saying and doing and where it's likely to leave us with respect to the war that you had such an instrumental role in helping inaugurate and get onto its early stages, at least.
Well, I was struck by how the president stressed repeatedly in his Oval Office speech that the United States remained committed in Iraq, and yet he didn't provide any explanation of why the United States has an interest in remaining committed in Iraq. The success of the surge is so substantial that the president obviously cannot deny it, nor does he want to fritter it away. I mean, he just couldn't afford politically to fritter away a military victory as significant as what was wrought by General Petraeus with his new strategy in Iraq. And yet the president is clearly uncomfortable talking about what the American interest is. He had a lot of emphasis on how the war has benefited the Iraqis, but he didn't say anything about how it has benefited the United States or why the commitment that he said we're making to remain a strong partner of Iraq in the future serves American interests. Now, I believe it does serve American interests, and I think he has a case to make, and I think he should make it, because if we get into trouble, he's going to need popular support for that policy, and he's not going to get it unless he explains to the American people what's in it for them. And I think that preserving the success that we have in Iraq is a case that can be made. And one final point I'll make on that is it was interesting to note that when the president spoke at Fort Bliss earlier in the day, the same day that he gave the Oval Office speech, when he spoke to the soldiers at Fort Bliss, he got up and he said, as a result of your work, not only does Iraq have a brighter future, but America is more secure. And I said, boy, that's a really terrific admission by the president that this war, which the president had opposed, had made America more secure.
Right.
But it was interesting that in the corresponding paragraph of the speech that he gave from the Oval Office, which was carried all across the nation on all the TV, he dropped the line, America is more secure.
Yeah. It's very troubling, Doug, and I have to say it makes me anxious about the reality of his commitment to maintaining the benefits, the accomplishments of the surge, as you've so rightly said, we need to for our interests, not just those of the Iraqi people. Doug, let me segue quickly because we're going to run out of time before we have any opportunity to talk to you about several things that are important. The president is also engaged, as you know so well, in the latest iteration of the so-called Middle East peace process at the moment. We have the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and the so-called President of the so-called Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, in town for this seemingly endless dance. Where do you think we are? I know you've spoken recently about Jabotinsky, one of the founders of the State of Israel. where are we with respect to our friends in Israel and their survival?
Where are we in the peace talks? I would say that the administration has not shown much understanding of what the Arab-Israeli conflict is really about. And what became clear in recent years is the fundamental questions remain the main questions. The question of whether the Palestinian Arabs have a leadership that is capable of making peace and willing to recognize Israel's legitimacy as a state. And instead, the administration is focused on what it calls the final status issues, as if the conflict is about, you know, specific issues like sharing water or where the borders are. And I think that as long as the administration doesn't understand the fundamental nature of the conflict, they're not going to have much luck in solving it.
Yeah. And how would you characterize the fundamental character of the conflict, Doug?
Well, the Arabs have maintained a principled opposition to the idea of a Jewish state based on nationalistic and religious reasons for about 100 years. And I think that has to be taken seriously. They really have a fundamental objection. And until they get a leadership that has different principles and that basically says, you know, we want to define Palestinian nationalism in a positive way rather than as opposition to Zionism and opposition to Israel, I don't think there's much prospect for diplomatic progress.
Yeah, that's kind of a showstopper, isn't it, at the end of the day? And the concessions that might be made at America's demanding by Israel will conduce to more trouble, probably war, it seems to me, rather than peace. Doug, in the remaining minute or so we have with you, could you just quickly give us your sense of another of the president's initiatives, the so-called New START Treaty? You've written about it. You've been describing it on Capitol Hill to folks who need to be thinking seriously about this treaty. What are some of your thoughts and concerns?
Well, I believe that the proper way to look at the START Treaty is as part of the overall approach by the administration to nuclear weapons and the American nuclear posture. And I don't think the treaty itself is enormously significant by itself, but it is significant as part of an overall approach to nuclear weapons that I think is irresponsible. The main sign of the irresponsibility of the administration's approach is the president's endorsement of this idea of moving the world toward nuclear zero, which is to say the complete abolition of all nuclear weapons by all countries. What the president is talking about is so unrealistic. It would require the resolution of all the major conflicts in the world. It would require a degree of trust that really is just a fantasy. And it's the kind of thing that people can endorse because they're more interested in telling you something about themselves than they are in telling you something about the world.
Yeah, very well said. Doug, we're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid. We're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Douglas J. Feith, former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy under President Bush and now a senior fellow and director of the Center for National Security Strategies at the Marvelous Hudson Institute. Thanks so much for joining us, and come back soon.